Downloads of this show are available on Podomatic.com and the Podomatic mobile app.
I am Velocity Child, and every Friday at the stroke of midnight, ride the broomstick with fallen woman, stirring up the cauldron at Radio Free Brooklyn.
I learned in Korea that I would never again in my life abdicate to somebody else my right and my ability to decide who the enemy is.
Please forgive me. Please, please forgive me. Please forgive me. Please forgive me. Please forgive me. Please forgive me.
Got back from Korea. I was so mad at what I'd seen and done, I wasn't sure I could ever live in the country again. I got on the freight trains up in Everett, north of Seattle, and kind of cruised the country for 2 years, making up songs, but I was drunk most of the time and forgot most of those. I'd heard that there was a house in Salt Lake City by the Roper Yards of the Denver Rio Grande and Western where there was a clothing barrel and free food. So I got off the train there. I was headed for Salt Lake anyway. And I found that house, but right where they said it was, most of all, I found this wiry old man, 69 years old, tougher nails, heart of gold, fellow by the name of Ammon Hennessy. Anybody know that name, Ammon Hennessy? One of Dorothy Day's people, the Catholic workers, during the 30s, they started houses of hospitality all over the country. There are about 80 of them now. Ammon Hennessy was one of those. He'd come west to start this house I'd found called the Joe Hill House of Hospitality. Ammon Hennessy was a Catholic anarchist, pacifist, draft dodger in two world wars, tax refuser, vegetarian, one-man revolution in America. I think that about covers it. It was pure hell. First thing he did was he said, after he got to know me, he said, "You know you love the country. You love it. You come in and out of town on these trains singing songs about different places and beautiful people. You know you love the country. You just can't stand the government. Get it straight." He quoted Mark Twain to me, "Loyalty to the country always. Loyalty to the government when it deserves it. Get it straight. Get it straight." It was an essential distinction I had been neglecting. And then he had to reach out and grapple with the violence. But he did that with all the people around him. His Second World War vets, you know, on medical disabilities and all drunk up. The house was filled with violence, which Ammon, as a pacifist, dealt with every moment, every day of his life. He said, "You've got to be a pacifist." I said, "Why?" He said, "It'll save your life." And my behavior was very violent then. I said, "What is it?" He said, "Well, I can't give you a book by Gandhi. You wouldn't understand it. I can't give you a list of rules that if you sign it, you're a pacifist." He said, "You look at it like booze. You know, alcoholism will kill somebody. Until they finally get the courage to sit in a circle of people like that and put their hand up in the air and say, 'Hi, my name's Utah, I'm an alcoholic.' And then you can begin to deal with the behavior, see? You can and have the people define it for you whose lives you've destroyed." He said it's the same with violence, you know. An alcoholic, they can be dry for 20 years. They're never going to sit in that circle and put their hand up and say, "Well, I'm not an alcoholic anymore." No, they're still going to put their hand up and say, "Hi, my name's Utah, I'm an alcoholic." So it's the same with violence. You got to be able to put your hand in the air and acknowledge your capacity for violence and then deal with the behavior and have the people whose lives you're best with define that behavior for you, you see. And it's not going to go away. You're going to be dealing with it every moment and every situation for the rest of your life. Well, I said, "Okay, I'll try that." And Ammon said, "It's not enough." I said, "Oh." Said, "You were born a white man in mid-20th century industrial America. You came into the world armed to the teeth with an arsenal of weapons. The weapons of privilege, racial privilege, sexual privilege, economic privilege. You want to be a pacifist, it's not just giving up guns and knives and clubs and fists and angry words, but giving up the weapons of privilege and going into the world completely disarmed. Try that." That old man has been gone now 20 years, and I'm still at it. But I figure if there's a worthwhile struggle in my own life, that's probably the one. think about it, I'd always wanted to write a song for that old man. He never wanted one about him that way, but something mulched up out of his thought, his anarchist thought. Anarchist in the best sense of the word. Oh, so many times he stood up in front of Federal District Judge Ritter, that old fart, and he'd be picked up for picketing illegally, and he never pled innocent or guilty, he pled anarchy. And Ritter'd say, "What's an anarchist, Hennessy?" And Hammond would say, "Why, an anarchist is anybody who doesn't need a cop to tell him what to do. Kind of a fundamentalist anarchist, huh?" And Ritter'd say, "But Hammond, you broke the law, what about that?" And Hammond'd say, "Oh, Judge, your damn laws, the good people don't need them, and the bad people don't obey them, so what use are they?" Well, I lived there for 8 years, and I watched him, mainly watched him, and I discovered, watching him, that anarchy is not a noun, but an adjective. It describes the tension between moral autonomy and political authority, especially in the area of combinations, whether they're going to be voluntary or coercive. The most destructive, coercive combinations are arrived at through force. Like Adam said, force is the weapon of the weak.
Strong enough.
Chapter 8, Advanced Rituals. Before we move on, I want to stress how important the preliminary practices found in chapters 5 and 6 are if you want these advanced rituals to work or simply make much sense to you. Just as you can't go from sitting on the couch for months and expect to finish a marathon the very next day, you must have some basic mastery of the LBRP before you engage in the complex techniques you'll hear in this chapter. It's important that you don't feel rushed to get to the good stuff found here. When it comes to magic, the good stuff only comes from the quality of your intentions and practice, no matter what form of magic you're doing. Ritual, the Rose Cross. I began doing this exercise daily while in prison, mostly to help cope with my ongoing physical pain. One of the beneficial side effects of this practice is pain relief. It should never be used in place of any of the basic pentagram rituals. It's best added after them to add power and blessing to any other magic you've performed. Just as the LBRP equilibrates the aspects of us associated with the plane of Yasod, the Rose Cross ritual harmonizes the parts of us that exist higher on the Tree of Life, in the sphere of Tifereth. This practice employs several techniques you're already accustomed to. Inhaling and visualizing the earth filling up with light, for example. But one primary difference between this ritual and the LBRP is that the energetic boundary you draw around your temple here is shaped more like a cube as opposed to a circle, according to the walls, floor, and ceiling of the room you find yourself in. Most people find the Rose Cross ritual to be a lot more complicated and difficult to perform than the LBRP, at least at first. The frustration and confusion I felt the first few times I tried it were almost enough to make me quit. But there was just something compelling about it that made me keep trying. So much so that I became obsessed with it, to the point of dreaming about it at night. One thing that really helped me get over the hump was having the instructions right there with me as I walked from corner to corner in the room. As I've said elsewhere, the cross is a universally important symbol that predates Christianity by thousands of years. The cross used in this ritual represents the four cardinal directions, as well as the four elements that are transformed within us through the discipline of magic. Number 1. Stand in the closest approximation of the southeast corner of your room. As you inhale, see the earth fill up with light. As you exhale, draw a cross of golden light in the corner. Number 2. Inhale, and once more visualize the earth expanding with divine light. This time, when you exhale, draw a circle of red light over the middle of the gold cross you created, much like the image of a Celtic cross. Number 3. Take another in-breath. Watch the earth infuse with light, and place the first two fingers of your right hand into the center of your cross. Vibrate the mantra, Yeheshua. Whenever you do, it'll sound something like this. Yeheshua. Number 4. Inhale and see the earth fill with light. This time, as you exhale, draw a line of white light from the center of the gold cross in the southeast corner of the room around to the southwest corner. Number 5. Repeat steps 1 through 4, drawing gold crosses with overlaid circles of red light and charging each of them with the divine name of Yeheshua, connecting the four corners with a line of white light. When you complete the circuit, you should find yourself standing in a square of white light, surrounded by encircled crosses in each of the four corners. Number 6. Now you'll add two more crosses, one above and one below, in order to seal your sacred space in all six directions. You do this precisely the same way as before, inhaling, filling the earth with light, exhaling, drawing the crosses as described, and charging them with the divine name, all while standing in the middle of the room. Number 7. Begin by drawing a line of white light from your original cross, that is, the one in the southeast corner of the room, to the ceiling. After drawing and charging the cross above you, visualize the line of white light connecting that cross to the one on the northwest corner of your space. Number 8. Inhale and fill the earth with light again. Exhale and continue the white line from the northwest cross down to the center of the room on the floor beneath you. Visualize and charge the cross there, and then follow the same directions to draw the line of white light back over to the southeast corner of your temple. Number 9. Take another in-breath. Fill the earth with energy once more and retrace the line that connects the southeastern cross with the one in the southwest. Then do the same to draw the line from the southwest up the wall and across to the cross on the ceiling. Number 10. Following the same procedure, continue to draw the line from the ceiling to the cross in the northeast corner, then to the cross in the center of the floor, then to the one in the southwest corner, then to the northwest, to the northeast, and finally to the original cross in the southeast of your sacred space. Each time you connect the corners, be sure to inhale, visualize the earth filling up with light, and exhale as you draw the line. Number 11. Take another deep in-breath. See the earth infused with energy, and place your sword mudra into the center of the southeastern circle and charge it once more with the divine name. Number 12. In the end, you should be standing in the center of the room in the middle of a visualized cube with gold and red crosses in all four corners, as well as above and below. Number 13. Conclude the Rose Cross ritual by performing the abbreviated version of the analysis of the keyword LVX ritual described at the end of Chapter 6. After doing so, either move on to whatever practical magic you'd like to perform, or simply go about your day. It might be helpful to research the Rose Cross ritual on the internet and study the writings of other magicians. You never know when you'll come across a diagram or description that will help you understand this practice, and others for that matter, in a profound way. You could also go old school and check out Donald Michael Craig's Modern Magic, or John Michael Greer's Monsters, an investigative guide to magical beings. These are the two books that were tremendously helpful to me in prison when I had no access to the internet. An Introduction to Hexagrams and the Lesser Banishing Ritual of the Hexagram. The hexagrams we use in the following ritual are just geometric patterns consisting of two overlapping triangles, resulting in 6 points. These triangles can overlap in several different ways, including the traditional Star of David pattern, but there are also many, many others which are less familiar to the beginning magician. I would highly recommend doing extensive research through the internet, as well as traditional books on magic, in order to become familiar with their use. All these triangles should be drawn in golden light and connected together just as you have done elsewhere with a white line. To use the banishing form of the hexagram, draw the figure counterclockwise. To invoke, go clockwise. Draw these symbols directly on top of the blue stars created in the LBRP. Ritual. The Lesser Banishing Ritual of the Hexagram. Mages who strive to purify their intellect, psyche, and aura until only divine energy remains rely heavily on banishing rituals like this one. The Lesser Banishing Ritual of the Hexagram, or the LBRH, is an incredibly powerful tool for purification, beginning with using it to thoroughly cleanse our environment in order to ensure that there is no energetic residue to pollute us or the magic we perform in our sacred space. That being said, mostly what we're purifying through these banishing rituals is the ego and the levels of our energetic anatomy closest to the material world. Just as the pentagram corresponds to the elemental aspects of reality, the hexagram is associated with the planetary levels. We also use planetary energies when working with the angels and archangels of the Tree of Life, as well as the angels and archangels of the tarot. Planetary energies are viewed as subtle and rarefied, and they belong to a higher plane than elemental energies, which are considered denser and closer to the physical plane. When banishing, the LBRP clears an area of elemental energies, and the LBRH purifies a place of planetary energies. The latter is no substitute for the former. You should always do the LBRP before performing practical magic, however. And when performing the LBRH, it should come right after you do the LBRP. Although hexagrams primarily correlate to planetary energies, they still represent the four elements. It's just that they do so in their celestial form, as in how certain signs of the zodiac are referred to as air or fire signs, for example. For this reason, when we draw the hexagrams in the four quarters, they don't correspond to the same directions you'll find in the LBRP. For example, in the LBRP, east is associated with air, whereas in the hexagram ritual, east represents fire, because the first sign of the zodiac, Aries, is a fire sign. In this way, the LBRH is based on the triplicity you find in astrology. Number 1. Perform the LBRP, as talked about here in Chapter 6, or the one in Chapter 13 of High Magic. Number 2. Step forward to the eastern wall of your temple. Directly over the pentagram you drew there for the LBRP, draw a banishing hexagram of fire in golden light. This version of the hexagram is the one that looks like two upward-pointing triangles. The hexagrams you'll draw in this ritual appear as if overlaid in front of the pentagrams. Number 3. Inhale and visualize the earth filling up with light. Place the extended fingers of your sword mudra into the center of the hexagram and see it become brighter as you vibrate the mantra Ararita. When you do, it'll sound like this. Technically, Ararita isn't a name. It's an acronym for the Hebrew Akkad, Rosh, Akkadotho, Rosh, Ekudo, Timurato, Akkad, which means one is his beginning, One is his individuality. His permutation is one. Araritā is a holy word in the sense that it expresses the sentiment that there is only one source from which all things originate, and all things are an expression of that source. Number 4. Breathe in once more. See the earth infuse with energy, and draw a line of white light from the hexagram you just drew in the east over to the southern wall of your space. Number 5. Draw the banishing hexagram of earth in golden light in the south, just as you did a second ago in step 2, only this time the hexagram looks like the traditional Star of David. Number 6. Repeat step 3, placing your fingers in the hexagram and vibrating the mantra, Araritā. Number 7. Take an in-breath. Watch as the earth fills up with light, and extend the line of white light from this most recent hexagram over to the western wall of your temple. Number 8. Inhaling and visualizing the earth's energy as before, draw the banishing hexagram of air here. This is the one that looks like two separated triangles, one facing up, one facing down. Place your extended fingers in the center and see it flare up more brightly as you vibrate the mantra again. Number 9. Extend the line of white light to the northern wall of your space. Number 10. In the north, breathe in. Watch the earth fill up with energy and draw the banishing hexagram of water in golden light. This hexagram looks like two triangles facing each other, with tips barely touching. Number 11. Inhale. See the light once more. Place your fingers in the middle of the hexagram and watch it become brighter as you vibrate Araritā. Number 12. Draw the line of white light back over to the original hexagram in the east. Once this is done, you should be standing inside a circle of white light with gold, differently shaped hexagrams flaming in all four directions. Number 13. Standing in the middle of your space, stretch the energy of the circle above your head as if closing a dome above you. Then do the same thing beneath you. At this point, you should be standing in the middle of a sphere of white light. Number 14. To conclude, perform the abbreviated form of the LVX ritual. In their invoking form, the LBRP and LBRH together generate an intense amount of elemental and planetary energy that can be channeled to manifest a particular outcome on the material plane, or be absorbed into your aura for spiritual sustenance. Sidebar: Rapid Transformation. I think of ceremonial magic as the Western path to enlightenment, the counterpart to many Eastern traditions we're familiar with. Magic is a path, however, that seeks to liberate the individual from the cycle of uncontrolled incarnation in just a single lifetime, as opposed to many. And with the possible exception of Vajrayana Buddhism, this goal makes magic unique among most paths followed today. Accordingly, it's a tradition better suited to those who have psyches more inclined to the stresses of rapid transformation over a more gentle, gradual approach. At its core, magic is about transfiguring the ego into something higher, despite all the techniques to promote manifestation on the material plane. These advanced practices can be used for both, of course, but there's no substitute for using what you find in this chapter for spiritual sustenance. Ritual: the Celestial Lotus. I call this practice the Celestial Lotus because it best describes the pattern of angelic and archangelic energies that surround me on the astral plane when performing this ritual. I created it after experimenting with a practice called the Supreme Invoking Ritual of the Pentagram and receiving some modifications from my HGA. If you practice magic for long enough, this sort of thing will happen to you as well. You'll suddenly understand a traditional ritual in a fresh way, and make adjustments to the practice that make it more meaningful and useful to you, being guided by your HGA along the way. For example, the way I do stage one of this ritual entails Metatron, Raziel, and Zadkiel above me, Sandalphon, Kamael, and Zophkiel below me, Gabriel of Yasod, Mikael of Hod, Haniel of Netzach, and Raphael of Tifereth around me. After becoming familiar with this version of the practice, feel free to experiment and reorder the angels and archangels as you see fit, because the order of invocation will give the ritual a different feel and will lead to different results. All of the spheres on the Tree of Life exist within our psyche and aura, and they're usually out of balance in some way due to our current struggles, the nature of our surroundings, or simply because we're energetically depleted. These imbalances play out in the way we think, feel, and behave, even when we're not consciously aware of them, which can lead to depression, addiction, and obsessions of various sorts. The LBRP has the benefit of balancing our elemental energies, but the Celestial Lotus takes the next step and balances our planetary energies as represented on the Tree of Life, as well as correcting the imbalances of zodiacal energies within our aura. There are three phases or steps to the Celestial Lotus ritual. It's incredibly important to go step by step and gradually build up to the final stage, performing the first part at least once a day for at least 2 weeks before advancing to the second stage. That should be enough time to get a good feel for it and allow you to memorize all of the angels and archangels involved. As in the other practices I've described, the point isn't to rush toward some imaginary finish line, but to obtain every ounce of understanding you can at each stage. If you follow the instructions, you'll start to notice a significant change in the way you perceive energy and the astral plane, as well as the way magic feels to you in general. However, you won't be able to exercise the higher aspects of your psyche, the first stage of the awakening process, if you rush into stage 3 without adequate preparation. Just focus on visualizing every aspect of the ritual as thoroughly and richly as possible, and you'll lose yourself in the process and forget all about getting somewhere. The more you can experience the joy of this ritual, the more potent and effective it will be. I encourage you to be patient with yourself. These advanced rituals are not easy to do, and most people who practice magic never get to this point in the first place. All you really have to do is take your time, do the practices habitually as described, and guard against laziness and the desire to get instant results. Stage 1. Number 1. Follow the directions for the LBRP, but draw 2 invoking pentagrams in each quarter instead of just one. Draw the first one, called the Spirit Pentagram, in white light, and charge it with the divine name, Ararita. Then, draw another invoking pentagram, the elemental pentagram, in blue light, directly on top of the first one, so that the 2 pentagrams overlap. For the blue pentagrams, you can use the mantras you used in the LBRP, Yehovah in the east, Adonai in the south, and so on. Or, charge them with the mantras associated with the planetary energies that correspond with the spheres on the Tree of Life, as we discussed at the end of Chapter 2. Number 2. When you finish this step, you should be standing in the center of a circle of white and blue overlapping pentagrams in each quarter, connected with a ring of white light. Number 3. Now you'll begin to invoke the archangels, just as you did in the LBRP, being sure to add Metatron above you and Sandalphon below you, the version outlined in High Magic. Since this practice is all about the archangels of the Tree of Life, and Metatron and Sandalphon are already represented, you'll be invoking the remaining 8 archangels between the 4 elemental ones you've already called into your sacred space. Number 4. Between Uriel in the north and Raphael in the east, invoke Mikael of Hod. Number 5. Between Raphael in the east and Mikael in the south, invoke Gabriel of Yasod. Number 6. Between Mikael in the south and Gabriel in the west, invoke Haniel of Netzach. Number 7. Between Gabriel in the west and Uriel in the north, invoke Raphael of Tifereth. Number 8. Below you, on either side of Sandalphon, invoke Kamael of Geborah and Zaphkiel of Banah. Number 9. Finally, above you on either side of Metatron, invoke Raziel of Hachma and Zadkiel of Hesed. Number 10. As you've done before, visualize pulling the circle of light above you and then below you, such that you're standing in the middle of a sphere of white light. However, this time you're surrounded with the divine energy of 14 archangels. Number 11. Conclude with any practical magic you wish to perform, or simply end the ritual here, knowing that this tremendous collection of heavenly forces is arranging things on the material plane for your benefit. When I finish stage 1 of the Celestial Lotus, I have the sensation of almost being able to visibly perceive the archangels surrounding me, like a suit of divine armor as I go about my day. It's actually difficult to describe the experience, but it's a tangible sensation that only comes from the intense amount of energy you surround yourself with on the astral plane with this practice. But even that degree of energy pales when compared to the amount you'll generate in the next stage. Stage 2. By this point, you should be performing the LBRP, the LBRH, and stage 1 of the Celestial Lotus daily. If so, you'll be lit up on the astral level like a spotlight, and you'll be sufficiently prepared for stage 2, in which you'll add the 12 archangels of the zodiac to the ritual. This means you'll be invoking a total of 26 archangels before you reach stage 3. Doing so, you're informing the divine mind and your higher self that you aspire to see through the lens of ultimate reality, in which the individual self is merely an illusion. Number 1. Immediately after step 9 in stage 1 of this ritual, invoke the 12 zodiacal archangels in a second ring outside of the 14 archangels you've already called in. Just imagine that the floor is like the face of a giant clock with the numbers 1 through 12 printed on it, and invoke the archangels in a clockwise fashion, beginning with the 12th position. If it helps, you could paint or indicate the numbers on the floor in your space in some way, but it isn't necessary to do so. Number 2. As you invoke the archangels in the following order, do your best to visualize them wearing robes of their associated colors. Picture them close together, almost overlapping, such that no external energy could enter your space between them. Invoke them as you did the elemental archangels in the LBRP, by inhaling and visualize them becoming impressively large and magnificent in front of you. As you exhale, vibrate their names, mostly 3 syllables, but sometimes 4, and see them glow brighter with the power of your voice. Now remember, in this visualization, it's almost as if you're standing on the face of a clock. So when I give the numbers associated with these angels, that will be the number on the clock face where you invoke this particular angel. For example, we'll start with 12. The number 12 is Malchidiel, the Archangel of Ares, red. The number 1 is Asmodel, the Archangel of Taurus, red-orange. The number 2 would be Ombriel, Archangel of Gemini, orange. Number 3 would be Muriel, the Archangel of Cancer, amber. Number 4, Virgiel, the Archangel of Leo, gold or yellow. The number 5, Hamaliel, the Archangel of Virgo, yellow-green. Number 6, Zuriel, the Archangel of Libra, emerald-green. Number 7, Barkiel, Archangel of Scorpio, blue-green. Number 8, Adnachiel, Archangel of Sagittarius, blue. Number 9, Hanael, Archangel of Capricorn, indigo. Number 10, Cambriel, the Archangel of Aquarius, violet. And number 11, Amnitziel, the Archangel of Pisces, crimson. Number 3, after you've invoked all 12, stretch your arms out to your sides as if making a cross out of your body. As in the LBRP, bring your hands together above your head to close the dome of light above you, and then do the same to close it below you. In the end, you should be standing in the middle of a sphere of divine light. Number 4. If you're performing this ritual to absorb the gathered energy for spiritual sustenance, you can end here with what's called the license to depart. Simply say, "I now declare this ritual duly closed. Any spirits trapped herein may now depart, returning to your own abodes and harming none as you do so. Take with you the blessings of Yeheshua." However, if you want to follow these invocations with practical magic, do so before issuing the license, knowing that whatever you direct at this point will carry tremendous power. With practice and patience, this stage can be done in a half hour or so. If you perform it daily for a year, you'll be astounded by the growth and maturation of your consciousness, because the ritual fosters incredible balance among the various levels and aspects of your energetic anatomy and psyche. Be sure to become thoroughly familiar with stage 2 before moving on to the concluding phase of the ritual. I recommend doing it once a day for several weeks. Stage 3. I suggest doing all 3 stages together every day for at least 2 weeks, but doing so is quite time-consuming, and it does take a lot of work. It's almost like putting yourself through a Navy SEAL-level physical workout every day for 2 weeks. You can do it, but it probably isn't sustainable for much longer than that. I recommend 2 weeks to jumpstart the process, and then perform the whole Celestial Lotus once a week after that. If you've made it this far in your journey as a magician, you'll still be performing magic in your off days, for example, up through stage 2, or at least stage 1 of this ritual. Doing so will go fairly quickly by this point. Stage 3 entails invoking an additional set of zodiacal intelligences you won't hear about in Chapter 3. The angels you'll learn about here are known as the deacons of each zodiacal sign. They're basically smaller or less powerful versions of the archangels you invoked in Stage 2, and that's how I advise visualizing them. For example, you could imagine that the 3 deacons corresponding to Malchidiel, the Archangel of Aries, also wear red robes, but that they're all somehow less potent and impressive. In total, you'll be adding 36 more angels to those you've already invoked in Stages 1 and 2. We break down a circle in 360 degrees, which means that each sign of the zodiac represents 30 degrees of the circle. So each of the deacons represents 10 degrees of the circle, 3 of them for each sign. The point here isn't to give a lesson in basic math, but to help you visualize how these angels are situated around your sacred space. Number 1. After completing step 2 and stage 2 of the Celestial Lotus, you will have invoked 26 archangels. This is the point in the ritual to add the angels of the deacons, beginning once more with Aries at the 12th position of the visualized clock. The angels of the deacons are as follows. For Malchidiel, Archangel of Aries, Zazer, Bahahimi, Satander. For Asmodel, Archangel of Taurus, Katamidi, Minakari, Yakasaganots. For Ambriel, Archangel of Gemini, Sagarash, Shehadani, Bethon. For Muriel, Archangel of Cancer, Mathravash, Rahadets, Alankar. for Virgiel, Archangel of Leo, Lasanahar, Zaki, Sahabir. For Hamaliel, Archangel of Virgo, Anara, Rayada, Mishpar. For Zuriel, Archangel of Libra, Tarasni, Saharnats, Sakdar. For Barkiel, Archangel of Scorpio, Kamats, Nunduhar, Uthrodiel. For Adnakiel, Archangel of Sagittarius, Mishroth, Varan, Aboha. For Haniel, Archangel of Capricorn, Misnim, Yasyasya, Yesgedaborodiel. For Cambriel, Archangel of Aquarius, Saspim, Abduron, and Gerodiel. For Amnitziel, Archangel of Pisces, Bahelami, Avron, and Satrip. Number 2. To begin, picture the Archangel Malchidiel towering in front of you where you placed him in stage 2. Invoke the first angel of the deacons. Inhale and see Zazer expand behind your visualization of Malchidiel. Hold your breath for just a moment and then vibrate Zazer's name as you exhale. Number 3. Now repeat the same process for the next angel, Bahahimi, but place him right behind the first, Zazer. Then do the same for the third, Satander, who goes behind Bahahimi. Number 4. Take a moment to envision the archangel and associated deacons all at once. Number 5. Now continue in a clockwise fashion to the next sign, repeating steps 2 through 4 with the corresponding archangel and angels of the deacons as you go. Number 6. When you complete step 5, you'll be surrounded by 62 angels and archangels who represent every aspect and nuance of the divine mind as it is manifested in the form of the heavens. Number 7. Conclude with steps 3 and 4 as described in stage 2. Since there are so many intelligences involved in the celestial lotus, feel free to make cheat sheets to peek at as you move repeatedly around the circle of your temple. There's no need to memorize all of them up front or remember who comes in what order, although the more you perform the celestial lotus, the easier it will all become. This is the ritual that led to me first experiencing the dissolution of self. I can't promise the same for anyone else, nor can I fully articulate what the experience was like. But I can say that as a result, I'm a lot calmer, more focused, and quite a bit happier. Those are just some of the side effects that come from the incredible amount of spiritual sustenance generated by this practice.
I was traveling through Illinois when I was invited to stop and sing at a memorial there in the little town of Mount Olive. Now, who of note in American history is buried in the cemetery in Mount Olive, Illinois? I'll give you a hint. It was a woman. It was the Union Miners Cemetery. Do you have it yet? Mary Harris Jones. Mother Jones. It's hard for the mind to encompass a life that embraced the presidencies between Andrew Jackson and Herbert Hoover. Why, when Mother Jones was a little girl, there were people still alive who remembered the Revolutionary War. And she died on the eve of the New Deal. Her millinery shop burned down in the Chicago fire, and she had heard Abraham Lincoln speak in person. Mostly, though, Mother Jones was the miner's friend. Down in Kentucky, Tennessee, West Virginia. Well, the men would be organizing the underground workers, the miners,
Mother Jones had already organized their wives and led them over the snow-covered game trails down into the hollows, where, armed with mops and brooms, they drove the scabs out of the coal pits. Now, Mother Jones wasn't an organizer, she was an agitator, which meant often enough she was hated as much by the organizers as by the bosses. One time, Mother Jones was out in Colorado at the great Ludlow strike. Now, that was a strike to enforce the 8-hour day, which the state of Colorado had made a law, but they couldn't enforce it because Rockefeller owned the militia. Now, the governor promised not to send the militia into the coal fields, but he lied, and he did. Mother Jones was in the Union Hall down there at Ludlow, and word came that the militia had entered the coal fields. Well, she leapt up, and she screamed, "Let's go get the sons of bitches!" And she stormed out. She didn't look to see if anybody was following her. Nobody was following her. She just flounced up the road alone and confronted the militia. And that was the year that President Theodore Roosevelt called Mother Jones the most dangerous woman in America. And she was 83 years old. That's some kind of dangerous. Probably turn to those who may have not and calmly reassure them that this is in fact what happens when I sit on a stage. Not much more. This is about it. You'll notice no sudden or dramatic change in either my instrumental or vocal attack, as it were. This is nonetheless an American folk song. Did you recognize it as such? Of course you would. You folk. You don't hear them much anymore. Don't hear them on your AM radio, huh? Folk singers hardly ever sing them. That's because they're boring. Folk music is boring. Whack, fall the dido, blowy winds, hi-ho, hell, that's boring. But I am a folk singer. This is a folk music organization. You are ostensibly the folk, Nespa. That means we own this song together, right? We have thereby incurred certain social obligations which we will faithfully discharge, right? We're gonna sing this damn song together, boring or not. I'm still in Nevada City, California, up there in the foothills of the Sierra. All in the foothills because it's spelled like that. Oh, the old gold mining town. I've talked to some of you about that. 2,700 people there. One of the 49ers towns. And I also told you about the only social life in town being the Books of Harmony New Age bookstore, where people go down in the evening and channel dolphins and Martians. It's a New Age chronosynclastic infundibulum, or epicenter, as it were, Nevada City, California. Well, I was gone for a bit on one of the trips since I saw you last, and I got back, and my wife had bought the bookstore. So I am now ostensibly part proprietor of a New Age bookstore in Nevada City, California. Can you feature that?
Well, and I'm open to all those things. If you live in California, you've got to be open. If you're not, they pry you open. And I read as much as I can. She's got all the new men's literature in there. Most of my men friends belong to men's Robert Blythe men's drumming circles. We do that here. Kelsey, they're out in the wilderness, caterwauling and flailing away at those things and dragging their scrotums through the underbrush. It's healthy, I suppose. We swing in the trees and we steal sheep. We don't have a drumming leader, we have a grooming order. Robert Blythe came by on one of his workshop trips to teach us how to drum. We ate him. Rural professionals.
Nevada City, California.
Out cruising the back roads in their old green carryalls with their car stereos, blaring meditation music out into the wilderness. It's a caution. Whole place lightning struck by the peripatetic ruminations of the Tibetan ruling class in exile. A lot of Buddhists around there.
Nevada City, California.
Meanwhile, this very minute, old Jesse McVeigh, the well digger, nobody knows how old he is, lived in that county all of his life, is sitting at the bar of the National Hotel this very minute, looking at the freaks out in the street and muttering under his breath, "No matter how new age you get, old age gonna kick your ass." Anyone know what I'm talking about?
Nevada City, California. Nevada City, California. Nevada City, California.
I was invited to the State Young Writers Conference out at Cheney, which is at Eastern Washington University, and I did want to embarrass my son, you know, and I was going to behave myself because I had to live there then, the chore, but I got on the stage. It was an enormous auditorium. There are 2,700 young faces out there, none of them with any prospects anybody could detect. And off to the side of the stage was the suit and tie crowd, the people from the school district and the principals, and the main speaker following me was from the Chamber of Commerce. Well, something inside of me snapped. And I got to the microphone, and I looked out over that multitude of faces, and I said something to the effect of, "You're about to be told one more time that you're America's most valuable natural resource. Have you seen what they do to valuable natural resources? Have you seen a strip mine? Have you seen a clear cut in the forest? Have you seen a polluted river? Don't ever let them call you a valuable natural resource. They're going to strip mine your soul. They're going to clear cut your best thoughts for the sake of profit unless you learn to resist. Because the profit system follows the path of least resistance. And following the path of least resistance is what makes the river crooked." Well, there was great gnashing of teeth and rending of garments. Mine. Born to the door, screaming epithets over my shoulder, something to the effect of, "Make a break for it, kids. Flee to the wilderness. The one within, if you can find it." Well, I wrote them a nice letter, though, as I oozed out of the state, headed for Nevada City. I sent it to their little literary magazine. I respect kids. I love especially little kids. Little kids are assholes. But they're their own assholes. See, it's when you grow up and be somebody else's asshole, we're all in trouble. You're like bankers and B-52 pilots.
There comes a time when the operation of the machine is so odious that you cannot even tacitly participate. You've got to place your bodies on the gears, the wheels, all the mechanism, and you've got to indicate to those who own it and those who run it that unless you are free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
I'd like to do a song of great social and political import. It goes like this. Oh, Lord, won't you buy me a Mercedes Benz? My friends all drive Porsches. I must make amends. Worked hard all my lifetime. No help from my friends. So, oh, Lord, won't you buy me a Mercedes Benz? Oh, Lord, won't you buy me a color TV? Dialing for dollars is trying to find me. I wait for delivery each day until 3. So, oh Lord, won't you buy me a color TV? Oh Lord, won't you buy me a night on the town? I'm counting on you, Lord. Please don't let me down. Prove that you love me and buy the next round. Oh Lord, won't you buy me a night on the town? Everybody, oh Lord, won't you buy me a Mercedes Benz? My friends all drive Porsches. I must make amends. Worked hard all my lifetime. No help from my friends. So, oh Lord, won't you buy me a Mercedes Benz? That's it.
I am Velocity Child, and every Friday at the stroke of midnight, ride the broomstick with fallen woman, stirring up the cauldron at Radio Free Brooklyn.